I think one of the great treasures that we have here in Wisconsin and the Midwest in general are our Great Lakes. And certainly here in Wisconsin, for us, Lake Michigan and Lake Superior are so important to so many people. And obviously the other Great Lakes play an important role as well. Let's see, how should I say this? I guess there's a big movement afoot to publicize and talk about the Great Lakes. And we have a couple of people who have been doing just that with us on the program today to talk about the state of the Great Lakes and talk about what we're doing to sort of renew awareness of the importance of these lakes to us here in Wisconsin and, frankly, everybody in the United States for that matter. Jeff Potter is Director of Communications Programs for the Biodiversity Project in Madison. He's been working with Wisconsin Public Television, the program in Wisconsin, to promote the Great Lakes heritage through a series of special segments and through a campaign. It's called Great Lakes Forever. And Jeff Potter, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Larry. Happy to be here.
And nice to welcome back Joanne Garrett, award-winning Wisconsin Public Television producer. She's worked on these Great Lakes segments. Want to learn about those segments. Again, I think the first one is, or the next one is tonight, as a matter of fact.
Tonight is tonight. Yeah, thanks for the invitation, Larry.
Yeah, I really appreciate having you with us as well. Well, this is a large project to really bring awareness of the Great Lakes to our Wisconsin residents, isn't it?
It's huge for us. We've been working on shows about segments on the Great Lakes up until this time, and then we're particularly focusing on this month with the Earth Day connection and people being a little bit more mindful of that. And we've got our segments will be running on our statewide public affairs program, which is in Wisconsin, which airs Thursday nights at 7 statewide. So that's the place you can see them. But because we've teamed up with the folks at the Biodiversity Project, you can see these segments more than just through the broadcast. And Jeffrey, maybe you can
talk a little bit about that. How'd you get involved with this, Jeff?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, the Great Lakes are a huge part of our culture and our identity here in Wisconsin. And I think that we saw this as an opportunity to help not only raise the profile of the Great Lakes, and people here love the lakes, they know that they're valuable, but they don't all know that they're vulnerable. And so we thought that it was an opportunity to sort of reconnect with the Great Lakes and use the power of Wisconsin Public Television to reach out and sort of tell the stories of people here in Wisconsin, how they connect to the Great Lakes, but how the lakes also benefit our lives. And through our Great Lakes Forever program, we're using the greatlakesforever.org website to provide not just the broadcasts online. People will be able to watch the series online, but they'll also be able to watch outtakes, learn more about the issues. There's a talk back section. They'll be able to talk back and ask questions, but also provide some of their own memories and stories about the lakes and learn some of the things they can do to help make a difference for the lakes every day.
And I want to give people a chance to join in maybe with their own comments or questions or reminiscences about the Great Lakes. It'd be fun to have them do that today. Let's give them a chance. If you'd like to join in, here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Been a quite an. I mean, there are posters and there are beer coasters, and there's along with a website, all kinds of things to promote the Great Lakes.
That's right, and I think again it goes back to that issue of people really loving and connecting to the Great Lakes, but not necessarily always understanding the issues. And there's a lot of issues that have come up with invasive species, the compact we were talking about over the break, which is about limiting diversions or exportation of Great Lakes drinking water. A lot of these issues are people might be hearing about them on the fringe in the newspapers or through friends, but maybe they don't understand all the issues. And so, again, we're trying to remind folks that the Great Lakes have been a huge part of our heritage here in Wisconsin, and that with all the benefits comes a certain responsibility to remain engaged and connected. And that's where we got involved with WPT.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joanne.
The beer coasters are an interesting item because the first time I saw those, I thought, well, for heaven's sakes, what an interesting place to drop some advertising. But this is what I thought was so great about the folks at the Biodiversity Project is because they thought, boy, put beer coasters in a bar, there are going to be a lot of people that see that. And that's the sort of place where people sit down and chat and people talk and people remember things. And a great little way to sneak in a reminder that these lakes are important to us and that we care about them. So I saw that beer coaster and I thought, well, these are sort of interesting people to hook up with. So it's actually...
beer is mostly water, I would
think. There you go.
And you've got some major breweries right here in the Great Lakes region. Of course, right here in Wisconsin, they're bottling that water and it creates an opportunity for people to think about, you know, where the water comes from when they drink it and where it goes when they're done with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, tell us a little bit more about what you're featuring tonight on the program.
Oh, we've got a segment I'm really happy to share with folks. We're looking at the rehabilitation of one of the lighthouses, historic lighthouses in the Apostle Islands. And I don't know if folks realize this, but the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore is just a gem. And this showcase that we have in Lake Superior is just a wonderful, wonderful place to visit. I was so surprised. My neighbors came back from a trip to the Apostle Islands last summer, and I have not seen such euphoric people in a long while. I had to sit down and see their photos on their laptops, and they were full of adventure. It's just a wonderful place to be. This the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore has the largest collection of historic lighthouses in North America, and they have six. Yep. And one of the glorious ones, they're all glorious, but one of the most glorious is the one on Raspberry Island, which, boy, you take 100 years of Lake Superior winters and weather, and it's hard to keep a structure going. This is one of the few wooden lighthouses, which also makes it more susceptible to rot and to decay. And just a fabulous group of people have garnered together to basically get this lighthouse back up to its former beauty. And it's the first time that it's been tackled in 100 years. So what's going to result is going to be absolutely glorious. We went up just with the idea that we'd do a story on the rehabilitation. And we were so enthused with what's going on that we plan on going back for the grand opening, which will be the 16th of June. And so we'll be able to show viewers what it looks like when it's finally done.
Oh,
so
cool.
What we have tonight is the process piece. And it's kind of... We refer to it in shop as this old lighthouse because it is, you're talking about some interesting structural problems. If you are interested in rehabbing at all, you'll want to see this piece because it's a glorious space, just a glorious space.
Joanne Garrett and Jeff Potter are guests today as we talk with them about the Great Lakes and about the Wisconsin Public Television Productions program segments that are coming up dealing with the Great Lakes. Really fun to have them along. And let's take some calls. John and Kenosha, we'll give you a chance first. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a big sailor, and the water level is becoming a huge problem for sailors and probably for anybody who's involved in, you know, boating activities. And, you know, it's very, very low. It's even lower this spring than it's ever been. And, you know, you can't get your boat into a lot of harbors if you have a deep draft keel. And, you know, what is causing that? I always blame it on the Chicago River, you know, the Chicago people pumping all their water down the river. But I wanted to find out what the real cause of that is.
Sure. And let's turn to Jeff Potter. Jeff, any comments?
Yeah, I'd probably want a hydrogeologist in the studio with you, Larry, to answer that question succinctly. And I'm sure you get five different answers from five different folks. But absolutely, water levels have changed over the years in the Great Lakes. And I think that there's a couple of factors. I'm really impressed that the caller mentioned the fact that the Chicago River down in Chicago, Illinois, about 100 years ago was reversed, actually. The river used to flow into Lake Michigan and fill up the lake. And since the early 1900s, I guess, they reversed the river in order to send all their waste downstream and down to the Gulf of Mexico. This was probably one of the most massive environmental projects that's taken place on any scale, certainly at the time of reversing the flow of a river. And it drains 2.1 billion gallons of water every single day from Lake Michigan. Over the years, you could add that up. We're talking, you know, quadrillions of gallons of water. But at the same time, we have issues like global warming. And those are going to affect the lakes. And then there's also natural changes in terms of how much rain and snow and melt and other things that we get. But I think these are important issues that people need to think about and recognize that, and I appreciate Joanne mentioning the historic restoration of the lighthouse, because it may be a metaphor for where we are in the Great Lakes, is we have to look at these as long-term problems and long-term solutions, and sort of on the restoration of the lakes themselves and protecting water levels and habitat and drinking water and the health of our communities, really these are problems that have been building up over a long period of time, and the lakes may not be able to take it much longer. Basically it's a situation where we know what some of the problems are, like the water levels and some of the invasive species, and it's up to the governments and the citizens and the communities to get together and work on implementing some of the manageable solutions we have.
And even from a commerce standpoint, let alone a recreational standpoint, every inch I'm told that every inch that the Lake Michigan drops, or that our Great Lakes drop, means hundreds of tons of less of materials that can be placed in those big ships that traverse the lakes.
That's right. And, to a certain degree, we want those big ships in here, and we know that they come in and they bring all sorts of goods, and they take goods with them when they leave. But at the same time, some of those ships are bringing invasive species, and they're contributing other problems as well. And there has been some national legislation on trying to regulate ocean-going vessels in the Great Lakes, and some of them are bringing invasive species in the ballast water that they hold on their ships. They release that into the Great Lakes, and that's where we got things like the zebra mussels and the quagga mussels. Those are two topics, actually, that are going to be covered as part of this series this month.
Yeah, we're looking not only at problems, if you will, that we need to tackle in the Great Lakes, like the quagga mussels. There's another producer who worked on a story about biofouling, which is a new method that might rid some of these hulls of invasive species. And I'll leave people to have that tantalizing idea what that might be, and watch our series. But we also, within our series, are hoping to grab onto just some of the memories and strong emotional feelings that people have toward the lake. And in a couple of weeks, we'll be airing a portrait of a woman named Grandma Jen, who is a very revered tribal elder in the Red Cliff band of the Ojibwe in Red Cliff, Wisconsin. And to spend time with her was just an incredible treat, to realize that this woman has really had Lake Superior over her shoulder for her entire life. And it is part of her soul and part of who she is. And I think that's true for a lot of people, that we have grown up in the shadow of these lakes, and they matter to us. And it's one of those things where they're so close to us that you just don't realize until you've been away how important that those big bodies of water are.
Yeah. Well, John, I thank you very much for calling. I want to give Wendell a chance from Marinette. Wendell, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. It's a nice program you have today. I'd like your guests, if they could, to talk a little bit more about some of the effects of global warming that are being seen now or perhaps forecast. I know recently there was a report that Lake Superior has been warming up much faster than we thought. So I think that's an issue that we need to look in the future to about the Great Lakes, too. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I think these are important issues. And, when people talk about, even myself, when I hear about global warming on the news or whatever, it seems so big and amorphous. And I think it's important for us to look at some of these international or global environmental issues in the context of our own communities and our own environment. And here in Wisconsin, the Great Lakes is a natural place to look. I think that issues of water levels are certainly important, but the caller makes a great point in terms of talking about water temperature. And what we know from years and years of science on the Great Lakes is that the food web, the chain of food that keeps the Great Lakes species alive, that brings in those lake trout, but also support all of the health of the ecosystem of the lakes themselves, those little temperature changes can really change the levels of the food population, the food web itself within the lakes, but also where the different fish species will spawn, where they'll find those food and the habitats that they can nest in. And again, this doesn't just have an economic impact on it, but really threats to the Great Lakes in a state like Wisconsin are really threats to our quality of life. And these are big and complicated issues, and we encourage people to watch the series on Wisconsin Public Television to get an opportunity to learn some of these issues, but also to begin a conversation and begin a dialogue. And we hope that they'll tune in on Thursday nights at 7 on In Wisconsin, but also that they'll go to greatlakesforever.org, learn about some of those issues, and get connected with their community. And more than anything, we hope to start a dialogue about the kind of solutions that we think are real feasible and possible right now.
Yeah.
I would add one other place to look for some conversation on that score, and that is this week on our other news public affairs program, which is Here and Now, which airs Fridays at 7 p.m. One of the guests we'll have on is Bob Krummenacker. Bob is the superintendent of the Apostle Islands Lakeshore. And Bob is also, they're in the process of trying to figure out their 20-year plan, their long-range management plan. And boy, global warming is one thing that they're worried about, because they're trying to figure out where they should site docks, how big the docks should be, what kind of facilities should they put together for boaters and campers and other people who are using that park. And in a time of limited resources, they've got to make the right decisions. And it's a difficult task to do. So he'll be speaking about that on Friday at 7 on our other show called In Here and Now.
Here and Now. Talking about the Great Lakes today with our two guests, Jeff Potter, who is Director of Communications Programs for the Biodiversity Project in Madison, and with Joanne Garrett, award-winning Wisconsin Public Television producer. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hope you have a chance to watch on Wisconsin Public Television tonight at 7 p.m. the next segment that Joanne Garrett and others have worked on regarding the Great Lakes. And you might also want to go online and take a look at the past segments that have been shown and all the other great information Jeff Potter was talking about relating to the Great Lakes as we visit with them. And again, if you want to join in with your questions or comments now, call us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to John in Milwaukee next. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi, mine is kind of global warming related. I was curious if anybody takes a look at the opportunities of wind harvesting on the Great Lakes and whether they have enough sustained winds, and would they be able to be used for that, and what would the effects of that be if they did?
That's a great question, John, and I am pleased to say that Wisconsin Public Television has actually already put together, Art Hackett, a producer and reporter, put together a story about potential wind turbines in Lake Michigan, interviewed folks all along the coast, and interviewed some of the, I guess, I don't know if they're scientists or not, but maybe engineers behind this technology. If you go to greatlakesforever.org and you click on the link to PBS there, it'll take you to the section, the Great Lakes Connection section, and you can actually watch that in streaming video on your computer, Art Hackett segment, and get some more information about it. But yes, it's something they've discussed over a number of years, and you've seen in Europe, places like Denmark and Holland, where they've put in these modern turbines in the ocean, and I think they are looking very seriously about these possibilities. But we also need to study very carefully the potential downfall or bad side of that. But I tend to be very optimistic about new technologies, and I know that when it comes to Wisconsin and our energy use, nothing's better than our state motto, which is forward. And I think that in many ways, looking to wind energy, solar energy, these kind of things, these are actually time-tested technologies that sustain the development of civilizations for millennia. I know folks at BMW, they're working on a hydrogen-powered car. And one of the ways they've talked about it is, how many years, thousands of years, did society survive as a solar energy culture, with agriculture, the Greeks, the Romans, everybody was solar powered. Then we had our fossil fuel period, which it looks like it may be coming to an end. And so we have to say, are we going to wind? Are we going to solar? What's going to replace these fossil fuels that are clearly in limited supply?
Yeah. Thanks, John, for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Ken in Hingham. Thank you very much for calling. Hi. Ken, are you there? Maybe we lost Ken. Oh, well, let's go to Paul in New Berlin then. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thanks, Larry.
Sure.
I'm serving on a citizen advisory council for the Water Quality Initiative for here in Milwaukee and the Great Lakes, trying to clean up the basically what gets washed out into the Great Lakes. And I was wondering if any of your participants in the program today could address the issue of government policies, incentives for getting consumers to basically help eliminate persistent toxic substances, things that are bioaccumulative or that affect, the fish, and basically the whole food chain, or just the quality of the water. More specifically, how can we get people in there when they take care of themselves, whether it's medicines? How do they dispose of the medicines? How, what they put on their lawns, what runs off them? How to basically use non-harmful substances and identify, have government identify what really are the long-range impacts of consumer habits? What is the, what really is the cost to society, and how can we give, based on that, the true long-range cost incentives for people to do what is going to be beneficial to the water quality of the Great Lakes?
Okay. Thank you for calling. And Jeff, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, I think that there are all kinds of incentives. I think the number one incentive for reducing the number of contaminants and toxic, persistent toxics in our lives is a healthier life. Mm-hmm. Healthier waters, healthier air, healthier communities, and of course, more than anything, healthier children and families. So that's a huge incentive that I think we can't ignore. But absolutely, in terms of contaminated water, there are all kinds of things that both citizens can do. Sometimes in this country, we vote with our dollars. So being informed about the kind of products we're buying and the environmental record of the businesses. But then also things about being smart about how we dispose of maybe pharmaceuticals and other things we have around the house, prescriptions that have gone bad. It's not a good idea generally to drop those right into your toilet or even in the garbage, because sometimes those end up in our local waterways. A lot of wastewater management municipal facilities don't actually test for those pharmaceuticals, and they found unusual levels of estrogen and other effects that have had an impact on fish spawning habitat, fish spawning, fish populations, frog populations, things like that. So I would love to see a major pharmaceutical or drugstore like a Walgreens or a CVS or somebody step up and say, you know what, we're gonna develop a take-back policy on disposable pharmaceuticals, and we're going to make that available to the consumers. But yes, cities can create their own rules and regulations about managing those facilities. But also we have to look to the federal government and look for standards that really protect citizens, not just here in Wisconsin, but throughout the country.
And Joanne, you've covered these kinds of issues in your segments, have you not?
Yeah, the segment list really is very diverse, from individual portraits to questions of how people do make these changes. One of the segments that our reporter Frederica Freiberg worked on was a portrait of a place called a Blue Wave Beach. And these are beaches that have been cited by a national organization as having made pretty nice changes to become pretty nice places. And the beach of Racine is one of two on the Great Lakes that has received that accolade. And it's a fantastic story, because this beach in Racine was not necessarily a place you'd want to go and take the family for the day. It was kind of scuzzy. And it has turned into a gem, an absolute gem, where people make that a destination. And in a time when so many people are headed towards swimming pools or more indoor activities, that to return to the idea of going to the beach and having that resource available for everyone, too, is a very wonderful thing. So it's a great portrait, and I encourage people to take a look at that, too.
And that was one that's aired all. That has
Correct.
Aired already, mm-hmm. So we can get that online.
You can watch that online. It's Racine's Blue Wave Beach, and you can find that, again, go to greatlakesforever.org and click on the PBS icon. You'll find all the past shows, as well as supporting, learn more about and information. But I think that story of the Blue Wave Beach in Racine, my wife's family is from Racine. You know, it's often derided in Wisconsin as not maybe the most environmentally friendly part of the state, but what they've been doing down there with the city and the kind of action they've taken in the community is just tremendous. And I think that it's important to recognize that the work that they're doing in Racine really doesn't cost that much. A lot of that is just changing how they manage their water resources, protecting local wetlands, maybe not cutting the grass around the park as much, creating some buffer areas. There is a cost to it, but I think sometimes people think about a solution to some of these big environmental issues, and they immediately think there's going to be big tax hikes and other costs that are going to go along with that. But in reality, some of these are just changing simple things about how we live in concert with the life, the nature that exists all around us. And of course, the benefits to the community of Racine have been outstanding. And that beach there, again, being nationally recognized as only one of two beaches on the entire Great Lakes system, that is a Blue Wave Clean Beach certified beach.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it is a gorgeous beach. Having shot there, it's a destination beach. I mean, I would never have believed that I'd tell people that, but I could tell you, go to Racine, have a nice dinner, and go see the beach. It's really pretty wonderful. We did some shooting there last summer. Every year they have a dragon boat festival where they have people out. And it just reminds you of how that place can serve as a cultural spot for people, too, because now that's a place where people have memories as a group of having gone to that particular beach and had a great time. And that's a very important thing for us to have, too. And the notion of the legacy that the lakes leave us, I hope, is included within this series, too, that people get that sense.
I know it is. Ken and Ingham is back, so let's go back to Ken here. Hi, Ken.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to just share a few reminiscences, I guess, of growing up on Lake Michigan. And I grew up in a little town called Oostburg. It was settled originally by Dutch fishermen and farmers, and a great place to grow up. But our high school days just kind of centered on Lake Michigan, you know, and it really was a great place to remember now at this point, I guess. But other things, too, we used to have some youth workers come, we were youth workers and had some kids come from around the state. And there was a gal that grew up on, or was growing up on Lake, Mississippi River,
mm-hmm.
big water. But we took her out on Lake Michigan on the beach, and her mouth just dropped open. She had never seen a body of water that you couldn't look across before. And things like that. I guess another thing, when I'm at like the basketball tournaments in Madison or something like that, if there's kids around and I knew they grew up on a Great Lake, I'll ask them, so what's the greatest thing about growing up in Washburn or something? And invariable, they'll say the lake.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just great to hear. And one quick point, I guess, I'm a kayaker, and the Apostle Islands is a world destination. It's one of the top 10 probably in the world as far as people, loving to go to. Again, appreciate the work you're doing with the Great Lakes. Support you. Never want to take those lakes for granted.
No. Make some great points. Jeff, comment?
Well, I just want to say that there's just millions of Wisconsinites, I think, that share that sentiment. And we're trying to tap into that and remind people again that they have this wonderful resource right here in their own backyard, that there's a connection to it, that the lakes aren't just valuable, but they're also vulnerable. But we don't need to lose hope. There's lots of great things we can do. And again, I think that Blue Wave Beach story that Joanne mentioned that's already aired, it's one of my favorite segments because it really started with citizens getting involved and making a difference. And I think that's something that we can all take to heart and be reminded of that as well, is that sometimes these environmental issues seem pretty scary, but we really have manageable solutions to a lot of these issues, and it's just a matter of us getting together and making sure that we leave something a little bit better than we found it. And I think, again, that's really part of our culture here in Wisconsin as well.
And Peter in Ellison Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Peter. Peter, are you there? Peter, are you there?
I am. Thank you for taking my call. I was at a forum. Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I was at a forum in Bailey's Harbor a couple years ago, and a member of the Great Lakes Consortium was speaking about the politics of the water of the Great Lakes, and she made a statement that turned a lot of heads, and she mentioned that the water in the Great Lakes is not a resource but a commodity. And as a commodity, I'm just wondering who owns that commodity, and can the federal government do what they want to do with that and follow, as they so often do, the dictates of lobbyists? Or is that resource controlled jointly by the Great Lakes states and by the people of the country? I'm just a little bit in the dark about that.
Sure, and I'm glad, I think, to talk about it, and I think we can probably talk about it in the context of the Great Lakes Basin Water Resources Compact Agreement. That might be a way to talk about that, Jeff.
That's right. And I know just a couple of weeks ago you had Peter Annan, who's a local author here, a Wisconsin author, who wrote a terrific book. If you're interested in learning more about the politics of Wisconsin's and all the Great Lakes water, it's called Great Lakes Water Wars. I encourage people to look at that. The issue of the Great Lakes and their water is certainly a big issue right now. And I think it's important to say that whoever told you that the water was a commodity may be interested in buying or selling it for their own interests. And in fact, the water is really the right and responsibility of all the citizens, and really not just of the Great Lakes states like Wisconsin, but really of the two nations, U.S. and Canada, and to a certain degree, the global population. It's almost 20% of all the fresh water, fresh surface water in the world is found right here in the Great Lakes. And so we have a responsibility to make sure it's protected. And right now there is an agreement that's been signed by the 8 Great Lakes state governors and the 2 Canadian provincial premiers. But that agreement to limit diversions and manage diversions of Great Lakes drinking water needs to be ratified by each of the states. And then once it's ratified by the state legislatures and signed by those governors into law in those states, it'll go before the Canadian Parliament and the U.S. Congress. But that particular issue, again, can be pretty complicated. Art Hackett, again, a producer here on Wisconsin Public Television, as part of this Great Lakes Connection series, did a terrific piece on the Great Lakes Compact last fall. And if you want to learn more about it and you've got 10 minutes and don't mind watching a little video on your computer, we'd really strongly encourage you to go to greatlakesforever.org, click on the PBS logo, and it'll take you right to the Great Lakes Connection section, where you'll find all of the episodes in this series, including this story on the compact that Art Hackett produced. And more than anything, I think we can tell people when it comes to our drinking water, the best thing we can do is conserve the resources we have, to be smart about the water that we have. It's nice to have regulations and rules and laws in place, but the best thing we can do is take personal responsibility for the time we spend in the shower, the amount of water we drink, and, of course, how we water our lawn and manage our water at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would, again, recommend as well Peter Annan's book. I'd sort of second that. His book on the Great Lakes Water Wars is for Peter, if you're really interested in sort of the politics of this thing, that's a good book. And obviously the Wisconsin Public Television programs are going to be a great source of information as well on it. Thank you very much for calling. And Fritz in Fish Creek, it's your turn next. Hi, Fritz.
Good morning. One of the previous callers was talking about runoff. The soils in this state are just about saturated with phosphorus, yet fertilizers that you buy in the store all have phosphorus in them. One good point is Manitowoc County just passed in a referendum for regulating manure runoff. So this group down there, Centerville Cares, probably had a lot to do with that. Mm. And the final one is I was going through a village and saw a knob last summer spraying weeds below the high water mark. And and another one is that the DNR allows you to spray water weeds. And, that's a form of 2,4-D. That breaks down. It probably affects freshwater shrimp and, the microorganisms.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get some comments. And, Joanne, you've covered that issue as well, have you not? Or are you going to be covering that issue?
I don't know. Well, runoff in particular is one of the pieces that we
right.
had. And again, that's you can go to the greatlakesforever.org to look at some of those past pieces, and that's included in that those sections of stories that we've done on this.
Yeah.
But I think what is impressing me about the callers is this great kind of underlying desire to see these bodies of water stay in a more pristine state. And I think that struggle of how we do that at the same time keeping development going and keeping our cities and counties going it's a struggle and a debate that all of us are involved in. And I think that one of the things we've been trying to do with this series of stories is to really show how broad that struggle is and how many different ways that that's being played out in the state. So I'd really encourage people to take a look at the website, because that does offer a very broad look at what we've got. And then just a reminder that we will be broadcasting through April with particular stories on this.
And just on the phosphorus side of things, there are a number of communities in Wisconsin and Minnesota as well that have sort of banned the use of phosphorus fertilizers for lawn fertilizers, if I'm not mistaken, Jeff Potter.
Yeah, we one of the helpful tips that we sort of highlight on the GreatLakesForever.org website is encouraging people to get their lawn and gardens off drugs. And essentially what we mean by that is a lot of the fertilizers and pesticides and other lawn chemicals we use, sometimes we use them in too large of an amount. You know how the laundry mm-hmm. detergent always mm-hmm. tells you you need more detergent than you mm-hmm. actually do to get your clothes clean, because it'll mean you'll run out of detergent and buy it more quickly. Same thing with some of the pesticides and fertilizers we use in our yard and gardens. They tell you quantities that are far greater than what you actually need, and those runoff. That is, the excess chemicals that aren't absorbed by the plants end up in our local streams and waterways when it rains or when the snow melts. And so this issue of banning at a county level or at a community level is a good idea. But again, we all have an opportunity and a personal responsibility to make sure that we're leaving the planet and leaving our communities right here in the Great Lakes a little bit better than we found them. And that may mean just cutting down on how much we use. And looking to composting and other things. And there's lots of things you can do in your community to make a difference. And I should also mention, too, as the calls we've gotten, a lot of folks interested in issues that are affecting the Great Lakes and affecting their lives here in Wisconsin. There is national legislation that's been introduced to provide federal funding to restore the Great Lakes on a national level. This was a bipartisan effort. It's called the Great Lakes Collaboration Implementation Act of 2007. And we've seen Democrats and Republicans get together on the Senate and introduce this legislation that would basically bring in some funds to the states of the Great Lakes. Milwaukee, for example, has suffered with combined sewer overflows. That means raw sewage, basically, or blended sewage being dumped right into Lake Michigan. They would get funds to rebuild their sewage infrastructure in Milwaukee. And these are obviously very, very expensive processes. But the Great Lakes are too valuable and in many ways too vulnerable to be ignored much longer. And I think any homeowner or car owner or anybody else knows that the longer you ignore a problem, the worse it gets and the more expensive it gets. And with the Great Lakes, this Collaboration Implementation Act, this restoration bill that's sitting right now in Congress, hopefully folks can get behind that and recognize that we can put it off and we can put it off, but it's not going to get any cheaper, and the lakes aren't going to get any healthier if we don't try to act today. So there are some things that are happening at the federal level as well that might give people some comfort. It might be a way that they can let their concern for the Great Lakes be shown.
And Joanne, could you remind us again, what are we going to see tonight on In Wisconsin regarding the Great Lakes at the 7 o'clock show?
You're going to see a piece on the rehabbing of the Raspberry Island Lighthouse, which is a gorgeous wood frame lighthouse, one of six in the Apostle Islands, which is the largest collection of historic lighthouses in all of North America. And people have been working very hard at getting this weathered beauty back up to her former grandeur. And this is sort of a process piece. You'll see what people are working on. But it'll also give you some very wonderful looks at what Lake Superior looks like from the lighthouse side. And believe me, that Lake Superior and the Apostle Islands is absolutely gorgeous.
So, and I might add that every Thursday night this month, you're going to tune in at 7 o'clock to In Wisconsin. I'm Patty Lowe, one of my colleagues, hosts that show. And you're going to find out some great information about the Great Lakes. And also, for all the past programs, and for more information about the Great Lakes, please go to greatlakesforever.org. You'll find all the past programs. You can watch them right on your computer, and a chance for you to participate in some online things. So there's a lot there, and I hope you'll take a look at it. And Jeff, Joanne, thank you so much.
Thank
Always
you.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
I appreciate it very much having you with us. Jeff Potter is Director of Communication Programs for the Biodiversity Project in Madison. Been working with Wisconsin Public Television program in Wisconsin to promote Great Lakes heritage. So it's great to have him along, as well as Joanne Garrett, with Wisconsin Public Television. She's an award-winning producer and has worked very hard on these Great Lakes segments. So I hope you'll tune in or go online and find out some more. Appreciate it very much. Coming up, we're going to be talking about rural communities, energy needs, and resource conservation. There's some things in the 2007 Farm Bill that really tie in to what we're talking about here with the Great Lakes, and especially in terms of up and runoff and potential pollution and that sort of thing. So we'll be visiting with Brad Redland coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.